Welcome to the Sage Thought Leadership Podcast, experience support for confident business makers.
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to our podcast. I'm Ed Kless, and with me today is Steve Hearsome. Steve is the founder of Edge and Stretch, working with brands and organizations to increase their capacity for collaboration and experimentation, including the NHS, a global fast-moving consumer goods company, international financial institutions, and many others. He is an experienced developer of change practitioners and consultants and a qualified consultant and coaching supervisor. Steve is a trustee and council member for the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations and previously served as co-chair of the Organization Development Network in Europe. He also holds a master's degree, a master's in change agent skills and strategies from the University of Surrey. Welcome to the Sage Thought Leadership Podcast, Steve Hearsome.
Lovely to meet you, Ed, and that was a bit of a mouthful for you.
No worries at all. First off, Steve, why do you do what you do?
The really honest answer in terms of what I do now is probably my daughter, who is in another part of the house, who's 17 years old. And over the years, particularly since she was born, I think an underlying motivation for me is I want the organisations that she goes into and her generation go into in the next 5 to 10 to 15 years to be healthier, more functional, more productive, and happier than many of the ones that I meet now.
And you have written a book to this end recently called No Silver Bullet, Bursting the Bubble of the Organizational Quick Fix. Talk to me a little bit about your book.
In a nutshell, it's a book which concerns itself with what's been described as the myth of fixability. And we see this in wider society, the idea that we can have silver bullet solutions, you know, magic bullet solutions to really complex, messy challenges. So in Europe and in the UK, we have Brexit and our former prime minister who talked about an unready deal. You know, so the idea that you can have something really easy to fix that. So we look for simple solutions to things like pandemics or climate change. And in organisations, that myth of fixability also is pervasive. It shows up in things like how we do culture change or behaviour change. We reach for methodologies and approaches that on a surface level say that they are going to guarantee success, but they can't inherently. And in part, what the book then goes into is it describes how there is a functional collusion, that decisions that are made to purchase silver bullets and these solutions are driven in no small part by unconscious patterns of shame and anxiety on both the part primarily of the buyers, but also the purveyors of such solutions.
And one of my favorite economists, Thomas Sowell, has a great saying. He says, there are no solutions, there are only trade-offs.
Absolutely. And the only problem with that is that, you know, if you look at the kind of the way in which many solutions to complex problems are marketed, they are marketed with profound certainty. The trade-offs are rarely ever explicitly stated. If you buy this from us as a consultancy or as a solution provider, by the way, you might have to compromise on that. That's rarely in the marketing spiel, if ever.
Well, but mostly because they don't feel it's going to be dealt with well by the consumer. But of course, then they're left in a position where they don't solve the problem, and then they blame the customer oftentimes for not being able to implement their wonderful solution.
and the collusion on the part of us consultants is that we then get surprised when we get scapegoated as well. Now, we both have failed to deliver a guaranteed outcome.
One of the things that you mentioned, the word anxiety, and I just want to pick up on that a little bit. My mentor has a saying. He says, anxiety and creativity are always inversely proportional to each other. So the more anxious you are, the less creative you can be. And you can't turn on creativity because it makes you more anxious.
Absolutely. And when you consider, there's a lovely piece of research from the late 90s by an American psychologist who, interviewing loads of senior execs, 19 out of 20 of them said the thing they feared most was their employees finding out how inadequate they felt. So just think about, you know, the insecurity the fear of being found out that you're not as omniscient or as omnipotent as you like to imagine you are and that others expect you to be. Now, the anxiety in that is actually quite substantial often.
And so it's important, I think, for, do you believe this, that it's important for people to let people know about that? I don't have all of the answers. I'm taking input all of the time and learning just like you are.
Well, I would say yes, but I think it's profoundly difficult to do that when, on the one hand, you have leaders often who are driven by their own needs, consciously, unconsciously, to move into senior roles because of their desire for success, who put immense pressure on themselves, but equally us as followers and the rest of us, the projections and the hopes we have for these people. You know, we still can't kill the zombie leadership idea of heroic leadership. We're still pretty much fixated on heroes and leadership roles.
What's happening in organizations that allows us to continue? I mean, it's clearly not working. So what is the psychology internally in an organization that allows this to continue?
In terms of the pattern of buying silver bullet solutions, there's many reasons, and I talk about this in the book. There's many factors that drive this need for certainty. That's what's underpinning this. You know, whether it be the existential fear of not knowing, whether it be you need to find a way to match your own ego ideal of how you want the world to see you. My own sense of what sustains it is, in simple terms, because we haven't got long, it's a kind of existential angst. Now, if we really admit to each other that we haven't got the answer or we don't know what to do, if we really admit that there is no one who can rescue us from that which really troubles us, then that's profoundly anxiety-inducing. It's a lot easier to, and this is key to the idea of the myth of fixability, to indulge in what is quite lazy thinking. You know, we rely on assumptions about change that are actually not really based in any solid version of reality. You know, the idea that change is A to B, that it's linear, that you can plan it to the nth degree. But these are very, very reassuring.
And what's not really sellable is saying, we can potentially improve your situation, but it's going to take months or even years.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, so when I work with clients, or when I meet them, what I tend to say to them is that my intent is to make myself redundant. And if what you're after is better sameness, you know, you want things to change, but you'd really rather they don't, then go and work with somebody else. There's no point in us wasting your time and money, and certainly not my time. But that's a quite counterintuitive and arguably not a very commercial sell, but I'm very comfortable with it.
One of my mentors, Peter Block, says, if you want tomorrow to be like yesterday, methodology will get you there.
Absolutely. I love the fact that I'm envious that you obviously know Peter, but if you read, I think it's the last quote in his book, Flawless Consulting, It's profoundly relational. It's all about how ultimately all you've got as a consultant, as a practitioner, is yourself. And that gets lost in all the conversations about consulting.
So, Steve, we have an exit question that we ask all of our guests, and that is, who is a hero of yours and why are they a hero?
So I thought long and hard about this, Ed, because I kind of didn't want to collude with the whole heroic leadership thing. I think we're kind of fixated on that. So I've actually gone for someone who is very personal and a little bit more complex. And that's my grandmother. So I'm half German. My grandmother died about 15 years ago. And she grew up during pre-World War II Nazi Germany. And she was a refugee. My mum and her siblings were given literally 30 minutes to flee west on a Sunday morning by the Russians in 1947. It was either that or go east to Siberia. But the reason why she means so much to me and why I thought of her was, I remember when she was still alive, she described to me what it was like in 1930s Germany. And she said, when the National Socialists, when the Nazis came to power, we all went, oh, brilliant, we've got hope. And then as soon as they were in, she said to me, we went, oh God. Because she said, I suddenly saw what I'd done. And the reason why she came to mind is, as well as her own personal story and what she did with her family, the capacity to acknowledge the contradictions in her choices and the pain of, on the one hand, doing something, then suddenly realizing the consequences, is something we've lost today. We are invited into binary thinking to take fixed positions, and the capacity to admit you're wrong is something that we eschew and we don't allow in ourselves or others. So that's why I'm holding her up as my heroine.
And lastly, Steve, how can somebody contact you?
Very easy. Hello@hearsome.com.
All right. Steve Hearsome, founder of Edge and Stretch and author of No Silver Bullet, Bursting the Bubble of Organizational Quick Fix. Thanks so much for being a guest on the Sage Thought Leadership Podcast.
Absolute pleasure.
Review and subscribe by searching your podcast player of choice for Sage Thought Leadership Podcast.